The hour of 10:30 actually having passed, I'm going to call to order the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee now that the presenters have arrived. But before I do that, Representative Wolgamott, I think you have two critical motions for us.
Mr. Chair, I have a pair of critical motions that I would like to bring to the attention of you and to our committee. First and foremost, after reviewing the committee minutes of our meeting from February 29th, 2024, I would like to move that our committee adopt these minutes and approve them.
Representative Wolgamott moves the minutes of February 29th. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Wolgamott.
Mr. Chair, in addition to approving the minutes from Thursday, February 29th, 2024, I would also like to move that we approve the minutes from our meeting on March 5th, 2024.
Representative Wolgamott moves the minutes of March 5th. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
And we have up the Office of Higher Education, and I don't know who exactly is going first, but welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed. Representative Cleaborn.
Before we begin, I just want to know if it was intentional that you removed my microphone. I'm joking.
Representative Cleaborn, it's never intentional, but it probably fell through the desk.
It's like dead. It's just gone.
Yeah.
It's okay. I mean, there are plenty.
Representative Cleaborn, I know you're doing that symbolically because it underscores the need to have this building renovated. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nicole Whalen, and I am the State Grant Research Manager for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. And I'm here today to give an update on our state grant program, or as I'm calling it, the State of the State Grant. So I thought I'd start off by giving just an overview of our state grant program. I'm sure everyone here is familiar with it, but just as a refresher, our state grant program is what is considered a need-based grant, and that means that we take into account the financial need of the student when calculating their award. To apply for a state grant, a student fills out the federal application for, the free application for federal student aid, or the FAFSA. This is the same application process that they would take to apply for any federal aid, including the Pell Grant. And for state grant, the application deadline is the end of the fiscal year, and there is no wait list for state grant. And that's a really important piece to note. Many states actually do have first come, first serve state grant programs with a wait list. And what we find is that what that means in practice is that many students end up not getting needed financial aid. So our state grant program does fund anyone who applies and is eligible for a state grant, which is a great thing, but also makes it kind of hard to forecast what kinds of appropriations and resources are needed for the program. For state grant, all recipients must be undergraduates, and they must demonstrate Minnesota residency. They also cannot have received a bachelor's degree. Overall, last year, 61% of all applicants received a state grant. And in general, roughly one-third of resident undergraduates overall receive a state grant. This year, the program has a budget of approximately $235 million. And last year, it saw about 110,000 applicants and awarded grants to roughly 67,500 recipients across 79 participating institutions. So at our last hearing, there were some questions about the students' share in the cost of higher education. So I went ahead and pulled some numbers from the State Higher Education Executive Officers Association that shows that student share over time. So the graph that you have in front of you, I know it is kind of a busy, big graph, but I'm not even showing all of the years of data that were available. This goes back all the way to 1980. The dark blue bars on the bottom represent the per student tuition revenues for institutions in our state, and the striped bars on the top represent the per student educational appropriations for institutions in our state, and all of these numbers are inflation adjusted. The red line shows over time the inflation adjusted share that students pay as a percent of all higher education revenues. And then the yellow line is the national average of that student share for comparison purposes. So here you can see that the student share has increased over time. It actually, if we went all the way back to 1980 on this chart, we would see that the student share started at around 20% and is now at around 50% of the total of total higher education revenues. We have been consistently above the consistently above the national average since 2002 for the student share. But it has been falling from a peak of 62% in 2013. You'll notice that in 2021, that student share did take a bit of a dip. This is because appropriations were significantly higher due to an influx of COVID-19-related stimulus funds. And now the student share has popped back up to 52%, which is a little bit closer to the norm. So I know we have talked in session before about the legislative session that wrapped up last year, but I wanted to provide a few highlights specific to the state grant program. So last year, the legislature had several monumental investments in higher education. In addition to a tuition freeze at Minnesota State colleges and universities and campus supports, the legislature increased the living and miscellaneous expense allowance that is used as part of the state grant calculation from 109% of the poverty guideline to 115% of the poverty guideline. Additionally, the legislature increased the state grant deadline to match the federal Pell Grant. So now the state grant deadline is June 30th of the fiscal year in which the student applies. And then items that are set to be implemented this year, or excuse me, set to be implemented next year in the 2024-2025 academic year include increasing state grant eligibility to 180 credits of grant receipt, modifying the award formula to ensure that families who come in with a negative assessed family contribution, which next year will be known as the Student Aid Index, are not negatively impacted by our award calculation, modifying the award formula to ensure greater equity for part-time students, and then lowering the minimum credit requirement from 3 to 1. I wanted to give a visual example. I'm a visual learner, I'm sure some of you are as well, of what that impact is of the increase in the living and miscellaneous expense allowance for a student. So this nice colorful chart shows kind of what the student sees when they get their tuition bill. They see first their Pell Grant applied to the tuition bill and then the state grant applied, and those grants will vary based on the student's family adjusted gross income. Then afterwards, there's a portion of the cost of attendance that is assessed to the student as the assigned student responsibility and reflects the fact that they receive a benefit from their education. And then there's a portion of the cost that is shared by the family of the student as the assigned family responsibility. And what happens in practice then when we increase the living and miscellaneous expense allowance is the entire state grant budget moves up. So what that means is that the total amount of money that the state considers as part of the cost of the student's education moves up, and thus their state grant moves up, and that impacts all students. And this also better recognizes the actual cost of living for a student. Okay, moving on now to projected spending for this biennium for the state grant program. So our office is required to provide projected spending reports for the state grant 2 times a year in February and in November. Excuse me, in November and in February. This November 2023, we showed a minimal spending balance in the state grant program for this biennium. We showed that we estimated the program would come in at just about 1% below total appropriations, with total spending of around $453 million. And then this February, we were showing a modest shortfall in the state grant program at $18 million above projected resources, which is just a 4% which is just 4% above total available resources for the program. So what changed from November to February? One of the big items that changed in November, our Minnesota State Colleges specifically reported a 1.2% enrollment increase. However, in February, that increase was adjusted to be a 3.7% enrollment increase for this fiscal year. So that it represents an estimated additional 1,100 state grant applicants in this fiscal year alone. And any enrollment increases at the Minnesota state system do have large impacts on state grant spending. Additionally, our office is watching the tumultuous rollout of the new FAFSA. As you may know, this is the first FAFSA released under the FAFSA Simplification Act, and there have been a lot of bumps in the road on rolling this out for the feds. So we have been watching a series of last-minute changes to the formula, which we have attempted to account for to the best of our ability. A lot of those changes signify changes to the federal needs calculation, as well as the Pell Grant award formula, and those do flow into state grant spending. These recent changes updated tables that are used in the need calculation to account for record high inflation. And what that ultimately means is that for many students, aid has increased, anticipated family contributions, what will be again referred to next year as the student aid index, have decreased. And that means that the great thing is students are getting more aid, and it's more reflective of what families actually are asked to pay in this economic climate. But it also means that they get more aid and they get more state grant. They get more Pell, they get more state grant, and contributions are lower across the board. So it does increase state grant spending, although that is a great thing. What we know overall is that any changes at the federal level can have multi-million dollar impacts on the state grant. Some additional items that changed for us in the February projection. Our office does continue to refine both the estimated need calculation that we're using to project for next year. As well, we try to monitor FAFSA filing. That hasn't gone very well this year, as we don't have any FAFSAs to really monitor. At the student level, we also keep track of cash flow on financial aid programs. And what we're seeing right now, early indicators suggest that an increase in demand for our financial aid programs across the board. So we're seeing a wait list or total capacity for programs such as the Fostering Independence Grant, the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program, and the Post-Secondary Child Grant. And these are our three largest financial aid programs after state grant, which is also seeing very high demand. So the takeaway here is that our state grant program is projecting a deficit for this biennium. Now, I wanted to give a little bit of a history on deficits in the state grant program. So there really are two kinds of deficits for our program. The first is a year-to-year deficit, and that happens when spending is higher in either year one or year two. Typically, those deficits resolve due to the natural fluctuations in cost and enrollment over time, and also our office has transfer authority to move funds around from one year to another so that funds are able to be spread evenly across both years. However, when spending does not equalize, then we are faced with a biennial deficit. And that is when spending exceeds appropriations for both years of the biennium. And this has occurred four times since the year 2000. To have just a quick play-by-play of that history, First, in fiscal year 2002-2003, the state grant program projected a deficit. At that time, legislative action was taken to reduce spending in across a number of items, and ultimately statutory authority to reduce awards in the instance of a projected shortfall was added to state law in 2004. We did project a deficit again in the 2010-2011 biennium, and at that time, the agency did take action to reduce awards by using that new statutory authority. And so that allows us to increase the assigned student responsibility, which at that time we increased it from 46% to 48.2%, and also allows us to increase the assigned family responsibility, and at that time we increased it by 20%. Again, in the fiscal year 2012-2013 biennium, our agency took action to reduce awards by increasing the ASR from 46 to 46.3% and then increased the AFR by 2%. However, in that instance, enrollments continued to decline in year two and the spending deficit was ultimately resolved. Lastly, in fiscal years 2018 and 2019, the office did project a deficit in state grant spending. However, that deficit was resolved by transferring in unencumbered funds from other financial aid programs.
Representative Cleburne.
I have to borrow your microphone. They took my microphone away. So my question about this, so once the deficits were resolved, did you go back to the original student responsibility and family responsibility, or did it maintain at that higher level?
Manager Whalen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Cleburne. So in 2012-2013, yes, we went back to the normal level for the ASR and the AFR, and awards were not reduced for those students. In 2018 and 2019, my understanding is that we never actually implemented deficit language and instead just transferred in funds from other programs.
Representative Cleburne.
No, thank you.
Manager Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is the actual statutory language that provides guidelines for what OHE does when a shortfall in the state grant program is projected. So what OHE can do is we can modify two levers of the state grant formula, and that is the assigned student responsibility and the assigned family responsibility. And they must be modified so that the reduction created by those modifications are in equal dollar amounts for each item. So our office has already addressed this deficit by issuing new mandatory estimated state grant award parameters. So we're using that authority that is granted to us in state statute, and we typically issue estimated parameters in November every year, and it's not uncommon for us to make changes to those parameters throughout the state grant cycle. Given the projected deficit, we issued another round of estimated parameters on February 21st, 2024, and that included the rationing procedures that are outlined in state statute. We recommended increasing the ASR from 50 to 50.8% and then increasing the assigned family responsibility for all student types by approximately 10%. And I wanted to show what that impact is for students. So I'm going back to my nice colorful chart. Here again, you can see when the student gets their tuition bill, they get their Pell Grant applied, they get their state grant applied. And what you see here in red is an example of what that decrease in state grant is. The decrease is smaller at the lower end of the income spectrum, and it does get larger at the upper end of the income spectrum. And then that decrease in state grant is ultimately passed on to both the student and or their family, as is applicable. On average, we anticipate that the decrease in state grant to students would be roughly $160. Now, you also may be thinking that we have this new program starting next year, North Star Promise. And with North Star Promise starting, that program will provide for tuition and fees paid at all public institutions in the state for students with family incomes of $80,000 or less. So for many students who are attending a public institution and who are within that income eligibility guideline, the North Star Promise will fill in to some extent for this reduction in state grant. So for North Star eligible students, we anticipate that the reduction in grant will only be roughly $90 on average. And that obviously can be more or less for certain kinds of students depending on their family circumstances.
Excuse me, Manager. Well, Representative Cleburne.
I just want to make sure I have my memory correct. So because so many of our students are not traditional or previous, you know, straight from high school to college, so the assigned student responsibility and the assigned family responsibility might just be to the student. Is that correct?
Manager Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cleburne, yes, that is correct. That is how state statute lays out the state grant program in the award formulation.
Representative Cleburne.
So then the quick follow-up to that would be, so when you're saying the additional responsibility would be, that could be why I have no microphone. I don't know. So when you're telling us the additional cost would be $90 or $160 or whatever, is that taking the combination, or is it just taking one or the other?
Andrew Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is taking the combination of those items, yes.
Thank you very much.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what are next steps for our agency? We are continuing to monitor all aspects of the state grant projection process. For us, one of the biggest question marks are FAFSAs. At this time, our estimates are still very much just estimates. I'm not going to go into details, but we have been doing work on our end to estimate what that change to the family need calculation will be, but we won't know exactly how it's going to shake out until we actually start to get FAFSAs. And we are hoping that when we receive FAFSAs, we'll be able to have a better understanding of how the new federal need calculation will impact state grant spending. Typically, the Office of Federal Student Aid delivers FAFSAs to our office starting in October. Because of this tumultuous rollout, we are operating under a very compacted time frame. And as far as we know, the last guidance that we got is that FAFSAs should start to be trickling into states and institutions by mid-March, which is next week. So hopefully that happens on schedule. And once we have those FAFSAs, we will start to look at what we're seeing and we'll apply that data to our estimates to see are we too high, are we too low, how are we coming in terms of what the actual data looks like. So we hope to issue a revised projection late this spring, just because we know it is a very unique year in financial aid world. And we thought that issuing a second revised projection, even though we're not mandated to, would be really beneficial to the program in the state. And then after that, based on the results of that projection, and as well after Minnesota State sets its tuition and fees, we'll be able to release final state grant parameters for next year. So that's all I have, but I'm assuming there are questions.
Questions, members? There may not be. Oh, Representative Robin.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here. Thank you for the presentation. So I just wondered if you've seen any data on how lowering the credit requirement to one credit may have impacted, you know, participation in the state grant program, and if there continues to be a deficit situation, if that might be a place where, you know, you could look at maybe increasing the credit allotment requirement again so that it would be targeting the grants to people who are, you know, in taking a more rigorous course load or at least a full course. The one credit course is fairly challenging to keep you on a path to graduation. So I just wondered if that's something you've considered. Thank you.
Andrew Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not have data on those outcomes yet, and I probably won't until next year. But I'm wondering if my compatriot here could help.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, members. Chair Pawlowski, my name is Megan Flores, and I serve as the manager of State Financial Aid Programs. One reason for that was also related to the conformity measures we talked about. The new North Star Promise program has a one credit requirement, and so it aligns the state grant program with the North Star Promise program. The Pell Grant also goes down to one credit, and so it aligns all three of those main programs to be the same. We do not yet have data on that impact since it won't start till this fall. However, just looking at course catalogs and enrollment, there are very few one credit courses. They tend to be a capstone or perhaps a senior thesis project, just one extra credit hanging out there, maybe a gym requirement. And so it's more just trying to make sure that those students who have that one class left are not left out of getting aid for it if they qualify.
Representative Robinson.
Thank you. No.
Any other questions? Representative Hicks. Was that a...
You said that, Chair, like you don't want me to talk. Are you going to take my microphone, too?
I don't collect microphones, Representative Hicks. But it is interesting. I'm assuming the table's eating them.
It appears.
I just had a question about, and please forgive my ignorance, I'm not aware of sort of the hiccups with the federal FAFSA, but it sounds like that's really impacting your work this session. So do you have, or this year, do you have any kind of timelines about like when you'll sort of see those bumps in the road smooth out?
Manager Flores.
Thank you for the question, Representative Hicks, Chair Pawlowski. I think it will take the entire cycle, to be honest. This is abnormal. The feds are set to release FAFSA data across the entire country mid-March, or the first half of March, in quotations, and they have a queue of over 5 million FAFSAs. We've never before rolled out 5 million FAFSAs across the country to students and families as well as institutions and state agencies ever. And so we are working closely. I have a meeting today at 1:30 with our counterparts at Federal Student Aid. We do know they're working hard to take a very mindful approach to this, but it does compact the situation for students and families as well as for state agencies and our campus partners. So we are a little bit in unprecedented territory. However, I am confident that everyone's doing what they can within their power to meet this challenge. And I know that our Minnesota campus partners rose to the challenge in just unprecedented ways during the COVID pandemic, which was uncharted water as well, which I think well prepared us as a state to how do we navigate something new and different. We're all very closely monitoring the electronic announcements we regularly receive from the feds. And so I do think the future will determine it. Signs are good. We're seeing increased enrollment, as we shared with the committee earlier. We also had a press release today related to direct admissions. We're seeing great impacts from that program. The enrollment for students participating in that is 50% versus their non-direct admissions peers at 26% enrollment. The FAFSA filing for that group is also significantly higher. For students involved in direct admissions, their FAFSA filing rates are at 71% versus their peers who don't participate at 51%. So I feel like in Minnesota, our investment in North Star Promise, our investment in direct admissions, and of course the historic investments we've made in state financial aid last year are going to put us in a good situation, even though it will be later, to meet these demands.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that wonderful answer. And I've said it before in this committee, and I'll just say it again. As a consumer of state agency services, your team has never been anything but exceptional every single time, you know, my family has ever had to interact. And so I am confident that you are continuing to do everything you can in this uncharted territory. But I did just want to, like, acknowledge how challenging that is for all of you and for your team to be in that space. And thank you for your commitment to ambiguity in a way that works best for Minnesota students. So I really appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Any further questions? Seeing none, that I want to also thank Representative Rarick and Representative Hansen for meeting with the Office of Higher Ed and working out some language that will be in their policy bill. And I encourage other members, if you have an issue, please go to the Office of Higher Ed or to the two systems. It would be very helpful to work some things out before we get them to committee. And with that, meeting is adjourned.